Welcome to the Deep Dive. You sent us this really fascinating interview with Mike Steiger. He was a U.S. pilot and advisor to the South Vietnamese Air Force, the VNF. And we're going to pull out the most interesting, most important bits for you right here.
Exactly. Our mission for this deep dive is, well, really to get inside his experiences, especially his time with the 520th VNF Squadron. It just gives such a unique view of the Vietnam War, doesn't it? Seeing it through an American pilot's eyes, but someone who was training and flying right alongside his Vietnamese counterparts.
And this interview, I mean, it's just packed with stories. Everything from his, initial flight training way back through intense combat, a water landing that sounds almost unbelievable.
Oh, that story is something else.
And even ejecting from a jet way up high. Okay, so let's get into it. Where did Mike Steiger's flying story even begin?
Well, he kicked things off with basic flight training on the T-6. That's a propeller plane. Then he moved on to jets like the F-84 over in Germany. Spent a little time in the F-86 Sabre 2, apparently. Then back in the States, he shifted gears a bit, became an instructor, T-28s mostly, and then the T-33 jet trainer. So, he wasn't exactly a rookie when he volunteered for Vietnam. He had a lot of hours under his belt already.
All right, a seasoned instructor pilot. So why volunteer for advisory duty in Vietnam? What was the thinking there?
It sounds like, well, a mix of things. A sense of duty, maybe. A desire to actually be involved in what was happening. He mentioned feeling like it was something he, should participate in. And initially, he thought he'd be flying T-28s. The VNAF used those for ground attack, too, so it made sense.
But that wasn't the plane he ended up with, was it?
Nope. Big switch. He got assigned to the A-1 Sky Raider.
Ah, the Sky Raider, the big prop plane.
Exactly. A real workhorse. Powerful, propeller-driven, famous for carrying just a massive amount of bombs and rockets, perfect for close air support. So he had to go train on that first, down at Corpus Christi, before heading over to actually advise the Vietnamese pilots on flying it.
Got it. Okay, let's talk about the heart of it then. The 520th VNF Squadron. What was that like when he first arrived?
Well, interestingly, it wasn't even really a full squadron right at the start, more like just detachment.
Really?
Yeah, but it grew fast. And what really jumped out at me was the initial number of pilots. Just six.
Six pilots to start a squadron. Wow, how do they even operate?
Makes you wonder, right? But they scaled up. They brought in 20 brand new pilots straight out of flight school. And Steger had this great way of describing their skill levels. He said it was like a bell curve.
A bell curve. How so?
Well, a couple were just naturally brilliant right away. A couple he felt maybe weren't quite ready for combat yet. And then most of them were somewhere in the middle, needing the training.
That makes sense. A familiar picture in training, I guess.
Totally. It's pretty standard, really.
So, among those initial pilots, or the ones who came in soon after, were there any really experienced guys?
Oh, absolutely. He specifically mentioned two veterans. One guy had, get this, 3,000 hours of combat time when Steiger first met him.
3,000 combat hours.
And even more amazing, Steiger met him again after the war, and by then, that pilot had logged 9,000 combat hours.
9,000. That's just staggering. I mean, for context, you said Steiger flew about 900 hours, 450 missions in his year there.
Which is a lot in itself, but 9,000. It just really underscores the sheer intensity and length of the conflict for some of those VNF pilots.
Incredible. Did he mention any other names? You mentioned Pam Swan earlier.
Yeah, he thought Pam Swan might have joined the 520th a bit later on. And he spoke really warmly about two others. And Pam, he actually still keeps in touch with them, and another pilot named Laroque, who sadly passed away later.
So real bonds formed there.
Definitely. You can tell he developed strong connections, friendships, really, with some of them.
So Steiger's main job was training these pilots on the Sky Raider. What did that actually involve? What was the training like?
Well, being an instructor already, he basically developed his own syllabus, a 45-hour program designed to get these guys combat ready in the single-seat version, the A1E.
Okay, A1E. And he mentioned a difference between that and the two-seater.
Yeah, the A1 fat face, the two-seater. The big difference with a single-seat A1E was the torque.
Pork, like the engine power twisting the plane.
Exactly. That massive propeller generated a really strong rotational force. He said it made the A1E quite a handful, especially for pilots just transitioning to it. More challenging than the two-seater, anyway.
45 hours to go from learning that tricky plane to being ready for combat missions? That sounds intense. What kind of missions were they training for?
The whole spectrum of ground attack, really. Bombing runs, strafing targets with the cannons, using napalm, firing rockets, the essentials for close air support. But Steger also really pushed instrument flying, you know, flying by instruments alone when you can't see outside. And GCA practiced ground control approach landings.
For bad weather landings.
Precisely. He said there's a bit of reluctance from some of the Vietnamese pilots about the instrument stuff initially. Maybe they preferred visual flying.
Mm-hmm.
But he really insisted on it, said it was crucial for being able to operate anytime, any weather.
Makes total sense. You need that capability. He also told a funny story, didn't he? About an island near the runway.
Oh, yeah. He remembered this little island just off the end of the runway there. He'd fly right past it, really close sometimes, on takeoff and landing.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, he read this book, Upcountry, and discovered that the island used to be a leper colony.
Oh, wow.
He kind of laughed about it, saying he was definitely glad he didn't know that at the time.
Mm.
Might have been a bit distracting, you know, maybe even caused a praying.
Huh. Yeah, probably best not knowing. It's those little details that bring it to life, isn't it?
Totally. The human side of it all.
Okay, so the 520th was heavily involved in close air support, giving fire support to troops on the ground. Can you walk us through an example mission he described?
Yeah, he gave a really vivid example. A friendly convoy got ambushed. The FAC, the forward air controller on the ground, directing the strikes, was calling the shots.
Right, the eyes on the ground.
Exactly. So first, they dropped bombs maybe 150 yards off the road. Then the FAC walked them closer, like 20 yards at a time, checking the accuracy.
Group tuning it.
Yeah. Until eventually, Steger got tasked to strafe the ditch right alongside the road. He said it was maybe 10 yards away from the friendly APCs and trucks.
10 yards. That's incredibly close.
Insanely close. He talked about the intense focus needed, you know, not hitting your own guys. And then pulling up after the strafing run, he almost clipped a tree. Just missed it.
Wow.
It just shows the precision needed and the danger, right? Laying down fire literally feet away from friendlies. High, high stakes.
Absolutely. And speaking of high stakes and danger, that water landing story, just incredible. How did that even happen?
Oh, man. This is one for the books. It actually started, kind of ironically, with his boss teasing him a bit for always wearing his Mae West, that inflatable life vest. Mm-hmm. The boss said something like, "We don't fly over water that much. You don't really need that." Famous last words.
I know. Let me guess.
Yep. Just 2 weeks later, he's taking off, loaded with bombs, and the engine just starts coming apart. Catastrophic failure.
During takeoff, with bombs.
Yeah. And he realized instantly, no way he could make back to the runway. Mm-hmm. Not even going to reach the shore.
Wow. Okay, so what do you even do then?
Training just kicks in, I guess. He started running through the Navy ditching procedures in his head. Said he only got through about 5 of the 11 steps before things happened too fast.
And where was he heading?
Towards an Army fuel dump, unfortunately. He could see the guys on the ground scattering, probably expecting a massive fireball.
Oh, gosh.
And to make things worse, 2 of his 4 bombs wouldn't release, stuck on the racks, which must have made handling the plane even harder.
So he hits the water. What next?
Well, the plane actually floated for a moment. But then he saw waves washing over the cockpit sill and knew, okay, it's going down.
Yeah, time to get out.
But he's struggling. Wet leather gloves, trying to unbuckle the parachute harness. It's not working well. And he's a strong swimmer, he said. But with all the combat gear on helmet, survival vest, pistol, everything, he just couldn't stay afloat. He estimated it was maybe 14 pounds of extra weight dragging him down.
Sinking.
He realized he was sinking.
Uh-huh.
And then finally, he remembered the Mae West, pulled the cords, inflated it, and popped back up to the surface.
Ah, thank goodness for the Mae West.
Absolutely. He said later he specifically went and thanked that colonel for the advice about wearing it. The advice that literally saved his life.
Incredible.
And he reckons he might be the only person to ever survive ditching an A1 Sky Raider in the water.
Just an amazing story of survival. And that wasn't his only close call involving getting out of an aircraft, was it? The interview also talked about ejecting from an F-84 back in Germany.
Right, yeah. Another brush with death years earlier. This was during a high-altitude training flight.
What happened?
He heard this awful loud grinding noise, and then bam, total engine failure. Power just gone.
Oh, man.
And the pilot flying wingman with him radios over, "You're on fire. Get out. Eject."
So he did.
Had to. Punched out at 27,000 feet, which he thought might have been some kind of record for an emergency ejection altitude back then.
27,000 feet. What's that like? Free falling from that high.
Terrifying, I imagine. He described the ejection seat tumbling violently end over end. And back then, the systems weren't automatic like today.
Right.
He had to manually unstrap himself from the seat, then manually pull the ripcord for his own parachute.
While tumbling at high altitude.
Exactly. He also mentioned possibly being a bit hypoxic, lack of oxygen, you know, because he remembered struggling to even focus on his wristwatch.
Disorienting.
Totally. He saw his F-84 hit the ground and just explode into a fireball.
Yeah.
Eventually, the German police picked him up.
Another incredible survival story. Did he keep anything from that experience?
He did, yeah. He actually cut a piece off the bright orange section of his parachute canopy with his survival knife. Kept it as a sort of souvenir scarf. He even wore it flying in Vietnam for a while.
Really?
Yeah, but then he had this close call where it nearly got snagged while he was taxiing his Sky Raider with the wings folded up, caught on something. So he figured, okay, maybe not the best idea to wear it anymore.
Good call.
He mentioned it was a kind of a thing, though, especially for younger pilots back then, wearing long scarves, sometimes attached to the D-ring on their parachute harness. Sort of an unofficial rite of passage, maybe.
Interesting, a bit of pilot culture.
Yeah. And about the crash site later, there was some concern about unexploded bombs or ammo, but thankfully that turned out not to be an issue.
Okay, let's circle back to Vietnam then and his time with the VNF. What were his overall feelings about the A-1 Sky Raider itself and the South Vietnamese pilots he worked with?
He really seemed to love the A-1. Talked about the kind of mystique it had. A lot of pilots felt that way, apparently. Maybe because it was so different from the jets that were taking over.
Right.
And he stressed how good it was for that close air support role. It could just carry so much stuff. Bombs, napalm, rockets on, like 15 hard points. Yeah. Plus it had 4 hefty 20-millimeter cannons. A real truck.
A flying arsenal.
Pretty much. And as for the Vietnamese pilots, he had incredibly high praise for them. Said some were just outstanding, absolutely top-notch. Even compared them favorably to experienced American pilots.
Wow, high praise indeed.
He put it down mostly to their sheer amount of combat experience. Flying constantly, defending their own country. They just knew the environment inside out.
That makes sense. Did he notice any sort of cultural differences in how they approach things, their mindset?
He did mention one thing in particular, Tet, the Lunar New Year.
Ah, the big holiday.
Exactly. He said when Tet came around, all the pilots just wanted to go home, be with their families, scatter all over South Vietnam is a huge deal.
Understandable.
He actually flew missions just to ferry guys back home.
Yeah.
Said he once packed 11 people pilots, ground crew, into the 2-seat fat face A-1 for a trip up to Hue for Tet.
11 people on a Sky Raider.
What? Must have been cozy. He also told this other story. They were providing air cover while the crew salvaged a crashed A-1. He took a young Vietnamese crew chief up with him in the fat face.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. And even though they couldn't really communicate much, language barrier and all, the sheer excitement on the kid's face when they dropped bombs, Steiger said, just transcended everything. You could see the shared purpose, the enthusiasm.
That's a great image. Shared experience in the middle of all that.
Yeah.
So after Vietnam, what came next for Mike Steiger?
He stayed in the Air Force, obviously. Got promoted, made lieutenant colonel, then full colonel.
Right.
Did a stint at the Pentagon, working in a section called Studies and Analysis. Sounds very official.
It does.
He mentioned being involved in some big project looking at inter-theater transportation.
Yeah.
Moving stuff between different war zones on a large scale.
Okay. Did he keep flying?
He did, yeah. Kept up his proficiency flying. Flew for a total of 22 years in the Air Force before, eventually, the flight surgeons grounded him for medical reasons. Said his flying days were over.
22 years of flying, though. That's a solid career. So, looking back at this whole deep dive into his experiences, what really stands out for you? What are the main takeaways?
Gosh, several things. The real difficulty of training pilots for combat while a war is actually going on around you, that pressure.
Yeah.
The incredible skill and, frankly, nerve required for that close air support stuff. Flying so near friendlies.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, those personal survival stories.
Yeah.
The water landing, the ejection, just defying the odds.
Absolutely.
And maybe most importantly, the deep respect he clearly had for the Vietnamese pilots, their skill, their dedication, flying day in, day out in that environment.
It really adds that human layer, doesn't it? Beyond just the dates and battles, you get the personal perspective. Definitely gives you a lot to think about.
It really does. And maybe that's the final thought for you, listening to this. What does a story like Mike Steiger's tell us?
Yeah.
About people from completely different worlds coming together, sharing skills, facing extreme danger side by side in a war. Think about that dedication, that resilience he described, those unexpected connections that form even in the toughest circumstances. It really emphasizes the human element, doesn't it? Even inside these huge, complex conflicts.